Hello. Welcome into Crossing Broadcast, Monday show on a Tuesday. It's not Monday, it's Tuesday. It's the day after Monday. I did warn people last week that, like, this show was probably going to happen on Tuesday and not Monday. I did. Like, I'm very sure that I even came on after Mike Garofalo and Kinker's interview to say, show probably Tuesday, check out for social. And I got some people on Twitter who were DMing me yesterday saying, where's the show? The show is here. Now, I get that it's an hour late, so for the people who are affected by this with a live audience, I apologize to you for being late today, okay? I'm sorry. A lot going on. I mentioned this. North Carolina online sports betting is now legal, so that's been a big thing over on my side of things and the content that I, you know, do and oversee. Whereas, like, Kinker's just out checking out crossingbroad.com, writing some stuff, and, oh, Is there news? Well, it wouldn't be a Monday show, Tuesday edition, without there being some big, big news in the world of Philadelphia sports. And we have some calls as well that we're going to get to in a little bit. Some thoughts because the Eagles have done something good. Now, I've seen a lot of people saying that it's maybe the best move they've made in the better part of 5-6 years. And I've seen some other people say that this is a massive mistake. And look, I think that if you've paid attention to the way that I assess sports for long enough, you'll know that, like, I try to be somewhat level-headed, and sometimes I throw out what people consider to be a hot take, which, again, I don't consider it a hot take if it's the right take, okay? And so, look, we need to get into the biggest signing that the Eagles have made in quite some time, certainly a splashy one, and one that's going to potentially hurt a conference rival, and that, of course, is Zach Bond, the linebacker who's going to come in and play some special teams, maybe compete for a starting job or a backup job. I don't know. Oh, that's not the move. Craig is shaking his head no on the other side of the studio, on the other side of the glass. He's saying no. Zach Bond is not the big move. What was the big move? Well, there we go. He's got the Shefty tweet ready to go. No, I guess that wasn't it, was it, Craig? It was, the Eagles signed the best running back that they have had in, I don't know, probably since Shady. I think that's probably fair to say, right? The best game-changing back they've had, if he can stay healthy, that they've had since Shady McCoy. They made a move that now has taken a very dangerous offense and has now elevated it to another level. I saw people yesterday calling it the greatest show on turf 2.0. And that, of course, is that the Eagles have gone out, they've pillaged the village up there in the Big Apple, and they brought Saquon Barkley back to the great state of Pennsylvania. The Penn State standout, tailback. He's now agreed to a deal with the Eagles. 3 years, $37.75 million. $26 million guaranteed. He could pick up about another $9 million with incentives. Now, okay, let's talk about what that means, because if there's one thing that we've seen trend-wise with the NFL, there are a few things that we can kind of break down. One, the time that you are best prepared, best suited to make a run at a Super Bowl in this NFL, typically, is when you have a quarterback on his rookie deal and you go splurge on every other position. The Eagles don't have that right now with Jalen Hurts. They've made him one of the most highly paid quarterbacks in the league. Okay. They have an absolute monster, a stud on the outside in A.J. Brown. They have an absolute stud on the other side, a very different kind of receiver in Devontae Smith. They have a legitimate game-breaking tight end underneath in Dallas Goedert. They just, and this also came up yesterday, they just made Landon Dickerson the highest paid guard in NFL history to bring some stability to that O-line, which also features my favorite Philadelphia Eagle, Jordan Mailata, also features Lane Johnson out at the tackles. Now, you do have one problem, obviously. You have to figure out what you're going to do at center. Is it going to be Cam Jurgens? Like, you have that. You don't have Jason Kelce in the middle anymore. That's okay. They're going to figure that one out. But now you've added another layer to this offense because you've added a guy who can be a legitimate three-down back, which, again, they have not had since LeSean McCoy. Now, if you were a big DeAndre Swift guy, and I found myself really enamored with what DeAndre Swift brought to this offense last year. I really was. I think that he fit the bill. He was a guy that you could rely on. I think that this coach, for whatever reason, decided that he was going to move away from running the ball, and it caused legitimate problems. But you could always come back to, hey, could Swift stay healthy? You had Rashad Penny, who they just flat out did not want to give the ball to. And the thought was, oh, maybe they're going to try to keep him healthy second half of the year, maybe the playoffs, you have another back that you can go to. And then Boston Scott's out there, who remains the, I don't know, the reincarnation of Darren Sproles to be your change of pace back. But now in Saquon Barkley, again, so much of this is predicated on health. Can he stay healthy? It is a massive, massive get for the Eagles. Now, you could make the case that, like, hey, anytime you can take one of the best players in the division away from a division rival, you do it. The Giants aren't really a division rival. The Giants are a team that, for whatever reason, decided they weren't going to pay Saquon Barkley, who was the engine that made that offense run. They opted instead that they were going to give $30 million plus to Daniel Jones, which is probably one of the biggest mistakes, one of the worst contracts given out to a player in the NFL in the past, like, decade. An absolutely atrocious decision on their part. But that's the route that they went, and now they don't have Saquon Barkley. We also saw Tony Pollard leave the Cowboys. Waiting to see, I think Derrick Henry, if I remember correctly this morning, Derrick Henry's heading to Baltimore, which is a blow to the Cowboys, who apparently thought that they had a chance to bring Derrick Henry on board as well. Barkley moves on from the Giants. You've now gotten better, and Swift didn't stay in the division. Swift went to Chicago, which, by the way, I think we all were probably following the same logic when the news started breaking on Monday about free agent moves, and we saw DeAndre Swift was leaving to go to Chicago. I immediately tweeted, Saquon Barkley, you are a Philadelphia Eagle, because it was clear that if the Eagles were going to allow their number one back from a year ago to leave, or they weren't going to match that offer, beat the offer to Chicago, that it had to mean they knew they were in good shape with Barkley. Now, I don't want to paper over something here that's, like, really big, which is there are still legitimate concerns on the defense, okay? And we're going to get to those in a little bit. But Craig is on his game again today. You know, Craig is rejuvenated, rested, re-energized by Crossing Broadcast these days. He's just on top of it. And you love to see it. He's rolling his eyes. He's kind of blushing a little bit. It's okay, Craig. It's okay. But, yeah, this to me is, like, one of those moments where, like, if you remember, and I guess I probably talked about this with Pagan and Kincaid about a year ago when the rumors were out there about Derrick Henry possibly being available through trade. The Eagles had gotten Swift, and then there were more murmurs of, oh, you know, could you pry Derrick Henry out of Tennessee? And I said, by all means, as much as I liked the idea of what Swift could bring to your team, getting Derrick Henry as a guy who could be your every down back and be an absolute bruiser, that gave you another level to this offense that I think it needed last year and it ultimately didn't have. There you go. Jeez, Craig is just like, I swear, Craig has every tweet I've ever sent out. But yeah, this was what, last April? Wow, look at that. Derrick Henry being behind the Eagles O-line, and it says the Beagles in the tweet, but it meant to be the Eagles. And I said, by God. You know, it was Akbar. Akbar Bajamil Abila, right? The guy who many people know from American Ninja Warrior but played for the Packers. He was the one who tried to break the news that Derrick Henry was going to be playing for the Eagles. So that was, what, 11 months ago. Obviously, it didn't happen. But you go back to what Barkley can bring to this team, and it is add an entirely different element, because not only is he an incredible north-to-south runner, but he's got some jets, and he brings something that no back on this team could reliably do a year ago. Barkley can actually be a factor in the receiving game. And so you add all those elements up, and you not only have the most well-rounded running back they've had in a very, very long time, but you have a guy that now teams have to respect. And look, I get that there were times where the Eagles would rush for 3-4 yards a carry, and then they'd get away from the running game, and you'd go, what the hell's going on? But You look at what they're going to be able to do now, and you look at, I always think of it as like the gravity, right? As the defense is collapsing in. Them having to now honor the run is going to free up Jalen Hurts in a bunch of ways. One, it's going to potentially have massive implications on what those receivers, those studs on the outside, are going to be able to do. It's going to probably free up Dallas Goedert considerably to be available as a safety blanket underneath for Jalen Hurts. And oh, by the way, you'll still have that option out of the backfield in the receiving game. It is one of those kind of moves where, again, health is the big factor here. I think it's only been one time in his career that he hasn't missed a game. If he can stay healthy, this is the kind of move that puts you over the top. This is the kind of move. I saw a lot of people comparing it to Christian McCaffrey, and I wouldn't go that far. I know that McCaffrey also had injury issues. I think that McCaffrey is a better overall player than Saquon Barkley, which is to take nothing away from Barkley. I do think that McCaffrey's a better, more versatile player overall. But if he can have even like 80% of the impact that McCaffrey has had with the 49ers, that's huge. Absolutely huge. Now, there's one other thing that I want to get to with this signing. But before I do, we got a few calls. And as we've been saying here, Craig, throw that graphic up on the screen. Love on the Monday show, even on the Tuesday edition of the Monday show, for people to call and leave their thoughts as these things are unfolding. And I knew there'd be a lot of excitement around the Barkley signing. And so I threw it out on Twitter, over on the old Twitter.com, 215-839-8477. I need to apparently create a better voice message. I went to test it because I was like, I thought there'd be a bunch of calls like immediately, and there weren't. And I tested it, and it was weird, and it was, you know, it's a Google voice number. You're not calling my number. And I'm not giving you Craig's landline, although maybe I should. Maybe I will give Craig's phone number as the show's number from now on, but probably not. But if you give this number a call, you just wait, and then you leave a message. But 215-839-8477, I wanted to know from the people what your reaction was to Saquon Barkley signing with the Eagles. And there are a few people who decided to leave a message, and I want to get to it. It looks like one of them might have fallen out of the back end here, Craigles, but let's see what this first one is.
Hi, this is Christian from Pottsville, long time, first time. Just calling about the Saquon Barkley move yesterday. Great. Great move from Howie Roseman, but not only Howie Roseman. Great move for Kellen Moore. You can tell that him and Sirianni were talking about these upcoming free agencies and how they were going to run this new system. And going out and getting Saquon Barkley is the perfect addition here. Great seeing all the reactions on between X and, you know, the national media getting all butthurt over the Giant, like Giants fans getting all butthurt over Barkley going to division rival, and they're almost in those like five stages of grief here already, and it's absolutely great. And I think a lot of these other NFC teams are kind of looking at the Eagles and saying, oh man, this might be the greatest show on turf 2.0. So thanks for having me on. Bye. Hi, this is Christian from Pottsville, long time, first time.
My hometown. I love when a good old skook checks in. So some interesting ideas there, some interesting thoughts, and one of them I think is like massive here, right? One is the fact that Kellen Moore might have had something to do with it, and it's a very good point, an astute point by my fellow skook. Because, yeah, you would have to think that this offense, and we've talked about this a bunch of times now, but this offense is not going to be Nick Sirianni's offense. If it were, I can't imagine you would have gone out and gotten a guy like Kellen Moore. Now, I know that Sirianni said a few times, you know, he's gonna have a little bit to do with the offense, have a little bit to do with the defense. He's going to be checking in on special teams. Remember, he's going to be the glorified handshake guy throughout the building. This is supposed to be Kellen Moore's offense. And they clearly are trusting this guy to fix the Jalen Hurts issue, to get Jalen Hurts back to being the ultimate weapon in not only the passing game, but also being able to use his legs. And how do you do that? How do you free that up? You go out and get a stud back. So I do agree that there's probably a lot of this that has to do with Kellen Moore and has to do with Kellen Moore's vision. And look, there's no better way to set up a new coordinator for success than by giving them another weapon like Barkley. Now, the thing that I would actually be interested to know, and this kind of comes back to the corresponding move that went with this yesterday, is the option to move on from DeAndre Swift. Was that something that was led by Kellen Moore? Is that something that was led by Nick Sirianni? Did they just decide that Barkley is a better overall player and that they had nothing against Swift, but they were just that flabbergasted that Barkley was going to be available and they had to jump at the opportunity? I would actually be interested to know the answer to that. But no matter what, I do think that that probably had something to do with it, and that Moore is probably licking his chops thinking about all the things that he can scheme with Barkley as part of this offense. And I've said it a bunch of times, and it's a broken record kind of thing, but like, this guy isn't just a rusher. This guy can actually be part of the passing game. Let's get to the next one.
Love the Barkley move. with all of the other signings. I'm just kind of not really worried as much about free agents at this point. I would just like to see them draft some skilled defensive backs and get a couple extra linemen, and let's get this going. Go Birds.
Got to go Birds there at the end. I like that. By a nameless caller. Thank you for checking in. There are, I think that actually kind of goes in very well with one of the things that maybe comes out of this that you don't feel concern about, but is something that can't be denied. And that's that this team isn't just one side of the ball. There are other concerns, namely defensive back, linebackers. I know that we made the joke about Bond at the start of the show, but like this team has holes to fill. Now, they also made the move yesterday for Bryce Huff, which is a really big one on their D-line. And that is a move that I know Jets fans were very upset about, but he's part of it. He's a piece. Like Nico checks in here over on YouTube and says, Huff isn't enough. I agree. Like, he's not the only thing. And we saw the rumors that Sweat was once again being considered as a guy that they wanted to move, and that they were once again allowing Reddick the opportunity to seek out a trade. I have to figure one of those guys is going to be moved, if not both. You bring in Huff as a replacement for one at least, and that's a good way to start. You know that this team has a propensity for going out and spending high draft picks on linemen, so it does stand to reason that when the draft rolls around, they'll probably look at an edge rusher. They certainly won't look at a linebacker. It would be great if they would actually find a good linebacker in the draft that they could, you know, rely on. I don't think they're going to go that way, but they always look for edge rushers. So it's entirely possible to use a high pick on one of those guys. I think that the D-backs are going to be a problem. That's something that they have to address, because you can't go into the season relying on Darius Slay to be big play Slay, to be shutdown Slay, to be whatever other nickname you want to throw out there. I think the guy's fine. He's not at his peak anymore. He's on the wrong side of his playing days. But I am glad to see, you know, he welcomed Barkley to town on Twitter. So that's all good stuff, right? And then I saw that there was one more call. I'm trying to move it over here to our system. And I saw, let's see if we can get this one pulled up. And in the meantime, it says it's processing. In the meantime, oh, there it is. Let's pull this one up as well.
White Marcus, Ford.
Oh.
Saquon Barkley signing. Let Howie cook. Offense should be prolific. Everybody knows we need another 3 or 4 legit guys on defense, but it's Saquon season. Ford out. Later.
Wow. I love when Ford calls in. We got White Marcus. Like, let's do the checklist. Craig, can you get the checklist ready? Do you have your little like paper and pencil ready? All right, we're going to go down. This is the Ford drinking game. White Marcus makes point, makes another point. Ford out. If you've reached all four of those things, congratulations, you're probably dead. So Ford, smart point though. Ford with a good point. Again, the same thing. You still need guys on the defensive side of the ball. I think that at this point you can probably say, look, offensively, the team is as set as they're going to be. They've got their quarterback. They've now got their stud running back. They've got their two guys on the outside. They've got their tight end underneath. They are good on that side. I do think that they're going to have to add one more lineman on the offensive side of the ball. You always want to have good insurance, okay? But the defensive side is legitimately the concern now. And if you're able to go out and acquire a playmaker or two, whether it's through the draft, whether it's through trade, hashtag Howie season, that's where this team's success is going to be found. If you can't make those moves, or if you, go back with me for a second, okay? When the Eagles won the Super Bowl, their defense was an absolute beast, a behemoth when it came to turning over the ball. They ran a positive turnover differential by a pretty significant margin in the Super Bowl season. And when this team is at its best, and actually, in fairness, like virtually every Super Bowl contender, for you to have a legitimate shot, you've got to generate far more turnovers than your offense allows, right? And so they, last year, proved pretty quickly they did not have ball hawks in the secondary, and their defensive line really struggled at times to get to the quarterback. Now, let's not forget, now I don't want to go back to this, but I'm going to go back to this. the Sean Desai defense that then devolved into the Matt Patricia defense, that took Hassan Reddick from being your best edge rusher, from being a guy who could get you double-digit sacks, lead your team, be like top three in the league in sacks, and they started dropping him into coverage. Was that to be more unpredictable? I don't know. Any kind of logic that they tried to throw out there or rationale never made any real sense, okay? So that's a problem. That's a legitimate issue. Now, you're bringing Huff in. I can't imagine that the idea that has been pitched to Huff from Vic Fangio is we're going to drop you in coverage, right? Or we're going to drop you in coverage that much. If they are able to go out and make, and I saw there was a trade that had been rumored a while ago for a corner. If you can get a ball hawk, you don't need two. If you can get one ball hawk or bring back CJ GJ, who as of an hour ago when I looked at Twitter, had not been picked up yet. CJ GJ to me is a guy who like does flip this thing on its head. CJ GJ is a guy that like I 1000% go after if I'm the Eagles. I'm looking right now. He's the number one trending on Twitter, or at least in the For You on Twitter. Jeff McClain just went on the radio and said that the Eagles are definitely interested in him. I would absolutely love it. I don't think that you can get any better than bringing the guy back. He clearly, his presence was felt. And then his absence was felt even harder. When you go back and you look at the team 2 years ago that made a run to the Super Bowl, and you look at that secondary and their play overall last year, I get that there were injuries. That defense lacked swagger. That defense lacked a ball hawk. It lacked the chutzpah that CJ GJ brings to town. And then you saw when he moved on to Detroit, yeah, he got hurt. He did. When he was in the lineup, that Detroit defense looked different, had a different swagger to it. I would absolutely love to see a reunion. And you know what? Sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder. And if they're able to kind of rectify what I think was a mistake in the first place by not bringing him back last year, instead choosing to bring back Darius Slay very late and bring back the animated corpse known as James Bradbury, I think if you make that move, if you bring him back, you're in better shape. Justin Simmons is also out there if you're looking for help at safety. What was it? McKinney was the guy that people really seemed to think the Eagles had legitimate interest in, another giant who ended up going to Green Bay. You get me a safety, get me two, I'm happy. Now, you might be a Reed Blankenship guy out there. Maybe there's a Reed Blankenship guy. But look, if you get Justin Simmons or you get CJ GJ to man one of those safety spots, I'm happy. I think you're in a pretty good spot. By the way, Rico, I love this. Rico over on YouTube, Chutzpah, great album by the Wild Hearts. So yeah, somebody's paying attention. That's what it's all about here. All right, I think we're good on the Eagles. Are we good on the Eagles? Does anybody have anything else in the comments that you want to address about the Eagles? I did see that, where is it at? T from the TO3, Trevor, says, I don't like paying for a running back. Saquon is giving my PTSD of DeMarco Murray. I'm going to admit something. Now, I know that I started this off very positive. I did have the thought. I did. I think I actually said in our Slack channel yesterday that the only thing I don't want to see happen is you end up with DeMarco Murray 2.0. I don't think that's what this is. You also have to remember that when DeMarco Murray was brought in, this team didn't try to fit any part of the offense to maximize what DeMarco Murray was. They tried to turn him into an entirely different kind of back. And I think he had lost a step at that point, but like they just didn't do a good, like they didn't figure out a way to maximize what he could bring to your team. That's why I think, like, going back to the point from the one caller about Kellen Moore, I think that's the thing that maybe you get the most excited about when you're thinking about, like, how they're going to use Barkley and are they going to get the most out of him. Again, like, they're giving Kellen Moore probably the most stacked set of weapons that any offensive coordinator in Philadelphia has had in God knows how long, right? I mean, you could probably go back to the offense that had Vic, McCoy, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, and then Jason Avant underneath, and Zach Ertz. Like, maybe you can go back to, or was it Selleck? Like, you could go back to those teams and say, like, maybe they were more stacked offensively. But I would say, like, this one, assuming that your center play doesn't drop off tremendously with Jason Kelce's retirement, this is probably the most stacked group of, like, weapons they've actually had. again, like another one of the callers also said, greatest show on Turf 2.0 would certainly be something. Joey B checks in here, a Giants fan, a dirty, filthy, stinky Giants fan. We appreciate you being here, though, Joey. I know you've been here before. Happy Saquon is someone else's soap opera now. Always injured and drama. Welcome home to PA. I don't even know where to go with that, Joey. It's like on one hand, there's like a slap to the face, and on the other hand, it's like welcome home to PA. All right. Okay, Joey. Look, we said this right from the start, okay? It all comes down to whether or not Barkley can be healthy. But I feel like that's, I don't know, isn't that how most players are? Isn't that how most guys who end up hitting free agency are? Especially skill guys, especially backs. It all comes down to health. If he can stay healthy, if this line can protect Jalen Hurts, they're in great shape. And by the way, it can't be overstated just how important they clearly think that Barkley is going to be in the passing game as well with blocking, because DeAndre Swift was not a good blocker. And you have to think that maybe that was also part of the evaluation that went into bringing Barkley into town. So he's an excellent runner. He can be part of your passing game. Oh, and by the way, the guy can block. I love it. Oh, I like this though. Joey trying to get my good graces here. Says, I don't look like a Russ. I look like a Dom or a Don Vito.
I'll take it, Joey.
By the way, I know, Craig, I didn't tell you to find this, but the Tiki Barber audio was wild yesterday. I think it was Tiki Barber and Evan Roberts, I want to say. And Evan Roberts is like rocking a half blue, half red beard and hair. And they were talking about Barkley leaving. And I think Tiki Barber said last week that if Saquon leaves, he would never forgive him. He'd be dead to him. And it came up again yesterday up on WFAN where they were talking about Barkley leaving. And Tiki like stood behind what he said, that Barkley's now dead to him. And then Saquon Barkley went back at Tiki Barber on Twitter. And that, I think, was also like one of the more interesting things to come out of the whole thing, was Barkley kind of chirping. And I know that this was up on the site, Craig, if you were looking to pull it, but from the site from yesterday. But Barkley clapped back at Tiki Barber, essentially saying, like, don't smile at my face. Like, don't be two-faced, right? Like, don't smile to my face and then say that I'm dead to you. So really interesting stuff. It was just, it's funny. It's a little bit rich for me that Tiki Barber would call out Barkley for leaving. If we remember, when Tiki Barber was a player, he walked away from his team to go take a TV gig. So here you go. So Saquon Barkley on Twitter. Actually, here, go down, Craig. I'm going to see if the, is the audio attached there? No, it's not. Okay. He says, good luck. You're dead to me. No, I was looking for the video clip there. It's not there. That's okay. All right, go back up. Oh, there you go. Hop. Keep going, Craig. There was a video. There it is. All right, play that.
And anyone else who has that opinion, what do you got to say to Saquon? You had a message for him about 5 days ago. Now he's an Eagle.
I already said it.
You're dead to me.
Good luck. You're dead to me.
Short and sweet. By the way, not the first time. Steve Smith was dead to us before 2011 when he left for Philly. The crew stepped up. So whether it's Eric Gray or somebody else behind the new ass we're building, see you, Saquon. Enjoy those overrated cheesesteaks.
Oh, the shot at the cheesesteaks at the end. The shot at the cheesesteaks. Have a little bit of decency, New York. Or have a little bit of decency. They're not overrated. Well, some of them are. Although, I have to stop plugging this place that's like up my way in Pottstown Gazos, but like I just saw that their brick and mortar's almost done and they're like going to have a new cheesesteak. I need to get them to sponsor a show, but like they're like doing one that it's going to be the ribeye, Philly whipped cream cheese, and then like maple bacon as a cheesesteak. And like, I'm all about it. Those cheesesteaks aren't overrated. There are some overrated cheesesteaks, but those are not those. The New Yorkers, though, they get themselves in a tizzy. Anyway, Tiki Barber left his team at the height of his playing days. He walked away from his team to go take a TV gig. And like, now he's doing radio, and like, that's fine. And he's on the biggest station in New York, and that's fine. But it is a little bit hypocritical on his part to go after Saquon for leaving. All right. That part of the show is done. Now, there are some other things that I wanted to get to. And of course, like tonight, well, I'm going to throw one part that was like sort of on the outline, but I'm not really that interested in it. I want to move on from it really quick. And it's the Sixers and the Knicks set basketball back about 40 years ago, like 40 years the other night. Sixers walk away with a win. but a low-scoring game, not aesthetically pleasing basketball. The good news is that Tyrese Maxey is expected to be in the lineup for the Sixers. They have missed him tremendously. I think that if we lined up the Sixers team that has played without Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid, if you played an 82-game season with that, you'd be looking at not quite process-era Sixers, but you'd be looking at something close to it. Maybe a 30-win team, maybe. Not a good team at all. Absolutely brutal. But it's going to be good to have Maxey back. And I think that this will go a long way to trying to rebuild interest in the team, because I don't blame anybody who didn't want to watch the Sixers without, obviously without Joel Embiid, but also without having Tyrese Maxey in the lineup and knowing that, like, this team has little to no chance of competing night in and night out. Having him back is going to be really big. It's going to be a boost, so boost of morale, and it gives them a chance. Now, there were people who were asking, you know, going into the game against the Knicks, is there a possibility that the Sixers could fall out of the playoffs altogether? Now, I don't see that. I don't envision a scenario where the Sixers fall off that poorly. I know that things haven't gone their way, and I do know that they've tumbled a bit, especially with Maxey out of the lineup, but they're still the sixth seed in the East, right? They're a half game up on the Pacers. They're a full game up on the Heat. The Heat have a game in hand. I don't see them falling out. Now, I don't want to see them in a play-in game. I think that would be potentially really bad for them, and then you end up getting Joel Embiid feeling the need to rush back and get back on the court before he's ready. But I'm hopeful that they're going to be able to, like, turn this thing around a little bit. If the season ended right now, they'd take on Cleveland in the first round. Cleveland does not scare me. That's actually a pretty okay matchup. So if you can say it's six, Cleveland stays at three, we're good. Cleveland right now is up, 3.5 games over the Knicks for the third seed in the East. You hope that Cleveland can hang on there, and I think that the Sixers have a very good chance against Cleveland, and then you play it out from there. Then it does get a little bit ugly. You'd probably face the Bucks in the second round. You hope that you can take down Glenn Rivers and the Milwaukee Bucks. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The Celtics are winning the Eastern Conference. I don't think it matters if Joel Embiid is back healthy. Boston is just playing at a totally other level. 50-14 through 64 games. They're absolutely unreal. 8-2 in their last 10 games. That's a team nobody wants to run into. Now, is it possible that a Miami, yeah, you get Heat culture. You get the Heat culture. First round, can an 8 seed upset a 1? That would be really funny. If Jimmy Butler could somehow summon whatever he needs to summon from inside of him and lead the Heat to a first round upset, it would certainly be something. But we'll see. We'll see. Now, look, last thing I want to get to today, we're going to be back on Thursday. At least Kinker will. I think I'll be here on Thursday. I might not be. And I know that he does have a guest lined up for Thursday's show as well. The return of Kevin Kincaid, who had flap surgery last week. And we love Kevin. We love his flap, which has been thankfully repaired. At least we hope. He's supposed to be back on Thursday. There was one other thing that I wanted to get to, and it's actually interesting. It kind of sets the stage for tonight, because the Philadelphia Flyers are back in action down at Wells Fargo Center, and they're going to be without their head coach. In fact, they're not only going to be without their head coach tonight against the Sharks, but they'll also be without their head coach on Thursday night at Wells Fargo Center against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that, of course, and Craig, I don't know if you could pull the video somewhere. I don't know. It should be pretty readily available. I know it was on the site. It's all over Twitter, but make sure when you pull it up, you do it without the audio. John Tortorella got suspended for 2 games and got hit with a $50,000 fine. Now, I assume that at this point, anybody who's watching this show, anybody who's listening to this show, will be well aware that John Tortorella got suspended and picked up a big fine because he refused to leave the bench. Now, Wes McCauley was the one who threw him out of the game. Wes McCauley is probably the most well-known NHL official. Some people compare him to some of the worst refs in all of sports. Some people like him. And Anthony Sanfilippo threw out the idea that maybe Wes McCauley was standing up for a young official. But they booted Tortorella from the game. Drops a lot of F-bombs. And so here's the clip here from the Lightning, but, you know, tells them to F off, and, you know, it starts to go downhill from there. Now, mind you, why is Tort so upset? This is a game where his team from 2004, that Stanley Cup winning team that nobody in this area likes to remember because it was a tragic loss for the Flyers in the playoffs, that Tampa team was getting recognized for winning the Stanley Cup 20 years ago. So he F-bombs the ref, and then the ref starts saying, like, you need to go. And he's like, I'm not going. I'm not leaving. I'm staying. And then at one point they say, you got to go. And he goes, I'm not going. You go. You leave. And so then it's this, like, long standoff. It's like, what, a minute and a half? There it is. F off. I don't know why I'm not cursing today, but F off. And then there's a little bit more back and forth. And then he gets, I don't know if it was Wes McCauley who he gets into it with, but he goes, I'm staying right effing here. And then this is the funny part. His players from that 04 team are watching this on TV. They're all crowded around the TV to watch what's happening. Because, again, like when you're sitting there, like if you're behind him, you can't see it. But like a real big thing. And then he starts getting into it with the refs again. He goes, you go. You go. Like, I'm staying here. You ref, you can leave. And it says, I'm not going. Huh? Get him over here. This is where he starts F-bombing this ref. And he's like, get him over here. I want to talk to him. And then it just, like, this is what, a full minute and a half, Craig, I think, give or take. And then the announcers on the Tampa broadcast, it's a two-minute clip. Finally, about a minute 45 or so into this interaction, Tortorella leaves. Now, it blew up on social media, right? It went the way that you would expect it to. Tortorella, like, doing his, he's up to his old tricks, gets booted. John Cooper, the coach of the Lightning, has gotten booted from games this year as well. But this was like one of those moments where you're like, man, all right, Philly fans are going to love it. NHL fans as a whole are going to love it. Torts fans are going to love it. And while I think it was really funny, and I think that in the moment, it's like, all right, yeah, give it to the refs. Because who doesn't like when the coach gives an earful to the refs? And it was a bad call. And again, Anthony was the one who said, like, hey, Wes McCauley was trying to stand up for the young ref who made a call, made a bad call. And he was, like, trying to stand in there and kind of take the you know, the fire for him. It puts the Flyers in a weird spot, and I would argue a really bad spot. And I feel like, for whatever reason, like, there are times where I guess because of what happened with Anthony and Tortorella in a press conference that, like, it's viewed as though, like, I have this skewed opinion of John Tortorella. And I would encourage anybody who cares about hockey, you go back and you listen to Snow the Goalie from the time Tortorella was hired until the last episode that we did. And my feelings on the coach have not changed in that entire time. Right coach, wrong time. Not a rebuilding coach. Not a guy that I think helps you to elevate young players, keep them elevated, give playing time to young guys over vets, and ultimately put you in position to get the draft capital you need to find the elite talent in the draft. That hasn't changed. I looked at this and I went, all right, his team's getting their ass kicked. It was 4-0 in the first period. Was this ego? Was this, he was embarrassed, and so he felt the need that, like, you know what, this has already gone to shit. We're doing the ceremony to recognize the 2004 team. I'm out. Like, he's just embarrassed, and he was trying to get himself thrown out of the game. Is that possible? 100%. Was he playing it up? Was he hamming it up because his old players were in the box, and fans in Tampa know what he is and who he is? Entirely possible. Is there a flip side to it where, like, he did not want to get thrown out and he was being genuine and didn't think that he had warranted getting thrown out because he lobbed some F-bombs at a ref? Maybe. I don't know. What I will say is this puts the Flyers in a bad spot because San Jose, well, they suck. They're 16-40-7 on the year. They're playing at home. In theory, you would hope that your coaching staff is going to be able to lead your team at home to a win against a dreadful San Jose Sharks team. But the bigger problem is what's coming up after that. The bigger problem is Thursday, because Thursday you're taking on a Toronto team that is very clearly going to head to the playoffs. They are up by 8 points on Tampa Bay for the third spot in the Atlantic Division. And we've talked about the sponge on Snow the Goalie, the Only Flyers podcast, that the way that the Eastern Conference is probably going to shake out, you're going to have your three teams from the Atlantic, your three teams from the Metro, and then the two wild cards, both of them are probably going to come from the Atlantic Division because you've got Tampa there and you have Detroit. And both Tampa and Detroit are in a spot where, like, I would say they're going to probably finish ahead of even where the Islanders are. The Islanders, by the way, if you haven't looked at standings at all, are the ultimate losers. They have 14 points in the standings just by overtime and shootout losses. They're not a good team. They're running a negative goal differential. The Devils are running a negative goal differential. The Capitals are running a negative goal differential that's like close to 30. Absolute disaster, okay? This game against Toronto is big, not because you're trying to knock Toronto out of the playoff picture, but because you need to start picking up wins against teams that are going to be in the playoffs. And if your goal is to try to make the postseason, which it very clearly is, and based on the moves they made at the deadline, it very clearly was in their thought that, like, all right, they moved off of Sean Walker, but they re-signed Nick Seeler, and they brought in Eric Johnson, who admitted that he's well past his best playing days. You make all those moves, it's, like, very clear that they're trying to go for it, whatever it is. And it is presumably some form of a playoff run. Are they going to have a legitimate chance to pull off a big upset in the first round? I don't know. This team, like, continues to just confound. I could just as easily believe that the Flyers are going to lose in five games in the first round as I could that you could tell me they're going to push a team to game six or game seven in the second round. I have no idea. They've been one of the most unpredictable teams that I've watched in Philadelphia in a long, long time. And, like, we have our standings. We have, like, our prediction standings that Ant Bundy, intern Andrew, and I do. And, like, it's a mess. I think Bundy is still in the lead. I think Ant might have tied him, or Ant might be a point behind. I think I'm 2 points behind now. But they've been a really tough team to pick and to predict. They should stomp San Jose. And if the Tortorella suspension is going to be the galvanizing thing, then they should absolutely blow out San Jose. But, like, I've also seen this team get caught off guard and not look right. And that game against Toronto, the worst thing you could have is getting your doors blown off. And we'll see if it happens or not. I think Thursday is probably as big of a game as they have the rest of the stretch. And by the way, they have a brutal stretch. I'm going to read these games off to you really quick. Okay, because it's pretty bad. Pretty bad. They're home against San Jose tonight. Should be a win. They host the Maple Leafs. It might be a loss. They're in Boston. Loss. They're hosting Toronto again. Probably a loss. They're in Carolina. Loss. They're hosting the Bruins. Loss. They're hosting the Panthers. Loss. They're playing against the Rangers in New York. Toss-up. Might be a loss. Playing at Montreal. Win. Hosting the Blackhawks. Should be a win. Hosting the Islanders. Should be a win. On the road against Buffalo. Should be a win. At Columbus. Should be a win. At Montreal. Should be a win. At the Rangers. Loss. Home against the Devils. This is where the whole season, I mean, legitimately, it could come down to the next to last game of the season. Because again, I don't think that there are going to be, I don't think either wild card is going to come from the Met. And if that's the case, it really could. If the Devils catch fire at some point, especially as the Flyers go into this really rough stretch, it's totally possible that, like, the penultimate game of the season could be like my voice. Really strong to start, maybe even unexpectedly strong to start, and then start to peter off, and then by the end, there's nothing left. We'll see. I have no idea. That game, by the way, is April 13th, that game against New Jersey. And then the final game of the year is going to be against a Capitals team that will very likely have been knocked all the way out of the playoffs. So you could end your season on two wins, but this next stretch is just brutal. Multiple games with Toronto, multiple games with Boston, Carolina, Florida again. Like, we're going to find out what this team is going to be. And we'll find out what they're made of. And we'll find out if they made the right decision at the deadline to make the moves that they did and perhaps not accept fair value, as Danny Briere said, for Scott Laughton. That was a big takeaway from last week's press conference, by the way, was there were offers for Scott Laughton. There was interest in Scott Laughton, but they wanted to be blown away by an offer, and they weren't willing to trade him for fair value, which, if you're a rebuilding team, you accept fair value. But if you're a team that thinks that it has a legitimate playoff shot, you don't. You can also make the case that they're a rebuilding team and they think that in the offseason they'll be able to get something of legitimate value for him. And that's kind of where I fall. I think that based on where they're at right now and the fact that they've flipped Lawton's minutes and Sean Couturier's minutes, I think if they're going to try to make a playoff run, the only way to do it is by keeping Scott Laughton. So we will see here over the next like week and a half, 2 weeks, if they're going to be a legitimate contender or if they ultimately prove to be Cinderella and the clock strikes midnight and the carriage turns into a pumpkin, which also happens to be orange. I do have a few other things here before we head out. Again, Thursday we'll be back with the show. I wanted to let you know. Saturday night, Snow the Goalie, live show, La Cecilia down in Oxford, Pennsylvania. Tickets are available at shop.snowthegoalie.com. It'll be me, Ant, and Bundy. We're going to have a lovely time. It's going to be a big Italian buffet. Join us down in Oxford. We're going to do the press road show. We'll be watching the Flyers and Bruins up on a big screen. We'll be doing our show, typically like press row show, where we do the intermissions and postgame and pregame. Doors open at 5:30. Join us there again, shop.snowthegoalie.com for tickets. And then Sunday is the Flyers Carnival, where we plan on being for Snow the Goalie as well. Now, there's one complicating potential factor for Sunday with Snow the Goalie and the Flyers Carnival. And it's not, will Anthony and John Tortorella have a chat on the concourse? Bundy's daughters are currently in the playoffs, college basketball. And if they win, I think tomorrow, they would play in a championship game on Sunday, probably in Boston. So we're going to see. There's a lot that could go down this weekend. So big Flyers weekend if you're in the area. Again, Oxford, PA, on Saturday, shop.snowthegoalie.com to go get your pictures. And according to Craig on the other side of the glass, Kyle Pagan will be at the carnival in the dunk tank, which I don't think is fair because his legs are so long that if he sits on the thing, he can just like keep himself propped up with his knees. And if he does go under, it's going to be like to his hips. He's far too tall. Ford says on YouTube that he saw Pagan at Lowe's. He had finishing nails and command strips. So I might actually believe you. Probably not, but maybe. All right, time for us to go. We'll be back on Thursday. Kinker, a guest, maybe me, remains to be seen, but definitely Kinker and guest. A big thank you to everybody who tuned in. Don't forget, you could be like all the other people who left a message on today's show. As things are happening in Philly sports, it doesn't matter what day, it doesn't matter what time, you leave a message, 215-839-8477, and we'll get to your message on the show here on the Monday show, or if it's the Tuesday edition of the Monday show, make sure you give that message or that phone number a call, leave a message. Happy to bring you up on the show. So for Craig behind the glass, for Kinker, whose flap is apparently healed enough for him to be back on Thursday, I'm Russ. Thanks for tuning in to Crossing Broadcast, your favorite Philadelphia sports podcast. Talk to all of you again Thursday and then next Monday.